Welcome to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Gavin Dahl. On today's program, we'll hear from area librarians about how they've been supporting young people over the summer during the coronavirus pandemic. Coming up, Montrose County librarians Elizabeth Cook and Amy Dickinson discuss their work with teens and suggest some further reading for fans of the musical Hamilton. First, we hear from Delta County librarian Sarah Smith, who works with younger kids. I started by asking her about what her duties as a librarian focused on serving children were like under normal circumstances.
Before the coronavirus, normal library service would be every week we offer story times at each of our five libraries. And story time is takes place once a week at each of the libraries. It focuses on providing early literacy experiences for children and caregivers and children ages birth through preschool age.
Mm-hmm.
And during story time, we do a lot of different activities. We read stories, we do finger plays, we do action rhymes, we do crafts. And during that time, we're developing numeracy skills, we're developing early literacy skills, we're developing fine motor and gross motor skills, and also introducing children and caregivers to self-regulation, turn-taking, and other skills that help prepare children for going off to school.
And so it's another way for kids to be socialized in addition to the educational aspect is sort of how to get along with other kids, like you said, sharing. And in terms of the five different branches once a week, does that mean necessarily you, again, pre-COVID, bouncing around to all the different branches, or are you part of a team?
I am part of a team. We have an amazing youth services team in Delta County Libraries. At this time, we have three youth services librarians. Mary Saunders is focused in the Delta Library. Audrey Hawes, she focuses on the Crawford and Paonia Libraries. And then I focus on the Hotchkiss and Cedar Edge Libraries.
Nice. And in terms of the demographics of the kids you serve, you obviously mentioned, that the library works with preschool kids in this case, and then all the way up through teens. What else do you know about the folks who are served by Delta County Libraries through these programs?
Absolutely. So a lot of times we will see families that come to story time every week. This is kind of a big part of their weekly routine. Routine is so important in early childhood, and, we are so grateful for the opportunity to engage with families. So we see a lot of different families in Delta County. Storytime focuses again on birth through preschool age, but we get a lot of families that have, children under the age of five and parents and caregivers that are, watching these children during the day. We get a lot of caregivers, grandparents, babysitters that are taking care of children while their parents at work. We also do get families where parents either have taken this particular day off to enjoy story time, or maybe parents that are not working and are able to bring their children to story time. We get a lot of different families with mixed ages. We have children, we have families that have, mixed ages where we'll have a six-month-old and a two-year-old and a five-year-old that all come to story time together. And story time really provides this wonderful social opportunity, not just for children to engage with other children their own age, but also for parents to have a moment in the week to socialize with other families and get to know other parents in the area with children that are similar ages of their own children.
My guest is Sarah Smith, who works for Delta County Libraries. You've had to get creative during the pandemic. The library branches were closed for months. You dove headfirst into virtual programming. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. Well, it was a really sad day for us when the libraries closed back in March, and it was an even sadder day when we were not able to offer story time or any children's programming. And so as a team, our youth services librarians worked together to come up with an alternative, a way to provide story time and other programming to children and caregivers in the area. And so we worked together, and we came up with a plan for virtual story time. So virtual story time was the first virtual program that we offered. And basically, it included each of our youth services librarians recording a video that was a short snippet into story time. Story time usually lasts for about an hour, and in the online virtual setting, that would be a little too long. So our story time videos range anywhere from 8 to 10, 15 minutes at most, and it's kind of like a little glimpse into the highlights of story time. So we'll often have stories or songs or finger plays or action rhymes or other activities that are a normal part of story time. And so these virtual videos are kind of a short little glimpse.
And so, I mean, you had to figure out a new application, think about camera, sound quality, lighting, all these things that are not normally your job description. What was that experience like? Was it just sort of just like, well, it's good enough, we just want to get it out there and connect with kids? Or were you like, no, this isn't right, we got to get the lighting done?
I would say for all of our youth services librarians, it has been a learning adventure for all of us. Not only is there the concerns with, we're not professional actors, nor are we professional video editors. And so learning how to use the technology that we have on hand at home, because when we started virtual programming, again, this was during the closure, so all of our staff were limited to the technology that they had at home. And so that was a learning curve, as each of us had maybe a different computer, or some of us were using, you know, our phones. So the technology aspect has definitely been a challenge. But we also had to look at the challenges of copyright concerns as we translated story time into the virtual format. There's a lot of different copyright concerns that come up when you're recording a video and sharing it online that don't apply to the in-person story times that we have in our libraries.
And in terms of access for the patrons of the library, did you make these things available on demand at any time of day, or were they scheduled to be a live event that was like a make it or break it kind of thing?
So we wanted to give our patrons the most access. And so we do have our virtual story times and our other virtual programs available on our website at all times.
Nice.
So this is, especially with back in April when everyone was moving to, virtual learning, we wanted to ensure families were able to watch the stories and engage whenever it worked best for them.
Sarah Smith is senior librarian with Delta County Libraries. For the young people you serve, what did you come up with to address where sometimes there's a lack of access to a computer or reliable internet for certain families?
Absolutely. I mean, having access to technology and internet here in Delta County is a big concern for many families. And so we wanted to still reach those patrons that weren't able to engage in our virtual programs. And so we, this summer, have been providing virtual summer reading program videos. But to go along with those videos, we've also been providing take-home kits. And that way we can still reach our patrons who are not able to engage in the online setting. So at each of our libraries, we have take-home kits available for pickup. The libraries have reopened on a limited capacity now, and those are very easy to get at this time. Before we were open, we did have those kits available during our curbside services.
Nice.
That we were doing in May and June.
So what's an example of one of your take-home activity kits? What would that look like?
So for our first week of summer reading, my coworker Audrey Hawes put together a really fun activity kit that had lots of different activities. And it focused on the idea of the story of the three little pigs and put together some STEM programming with an activity kit where kids would have all the supplies they needed to make a special house just that follows along with the story of the three little pigs, including different STEM building challenges and encouraging the kids to try different experimentation to see how different aspects create a more stable house.
And remind folks who don't know, STEM stands for science, technology,
engineering, and mathematics.
Nice. So that's some core curriculum to work into your materials. We recently learned that the Christmas tree at the U.S. Capitol this coming winter will be supplied from a local forest here in Colorado. It's been announced that kids from our state will be responsible for creating decorations to display in Washington, D.C. How are the libraries involved in this effort?
Absolutely. So we have partnered with the local Forest Service to provide Christmas tree ornament kits. And so this way, families can come to the library, pick up a craft kit to make an ornament, take it home, and then bring it back to the library so that we can get them to the Forest Service. And those will be hanging on Christmas trees at the U.S. Capitol this winter.
Wow. And another option for young people while school is out is the story walks for families. So do these stories rotate on a monthly basis around the library district coverage area?
Yes. So right now the library story walks are changed out. They post for 2 months. So we change them every 2 months. And right now we've got story walks that we hung are mounted in July that are going to be hanging through the end of August. And then on September 1st, all four of the story walks will be changing.
So let me ask you about these. So in Cedar Edge, people who walk along the Surface Creek Trail, you've got the story, One Leaf Rides the Wind. What is that?
Absolutely. One Leaf Rides the Wind is a story told in haiku that follows different aspects of nature, which is really beautifully paired with the nature along the Surface Creek Trail. For anyone who has never walked the Surface Creek Trail, I would highly recommend it. It's a really beautiful trail.
And so how do story walks work? So you basically, as you progress through your outdoor excursion, you see more and more sections of the book?
Yes. So along the trail, we have different outdoor panels, and at each panel are different pages of the story. So as you walk along, you'll get a little glimpse of each story, and if you walk the whole trail, you'll get to read the entire story from start to finish.
So in Crawford at the state park, you've got Snatch a Book. What's that?
Snatch a Book is one of my all-time favorite stories. It is a wonderful bedtime story about storybooks that go missing at bedtime and an inquisitive rabbit who is out to solve the mystery and discover the creature who's been stealing all the stories.
I love it. And almost done here in Delta at Schweitzer Lake State Park, you're sharing Is It a Mermaid? Well, that's the question we all want to know. Is it a mermaid?
Well, you'll have to visit the story walk to find out, but I will tell you it's a beautiful story that is all about kindness, friendship, and it has a touch of magic.
And in Hotchkiss at the Delta County Fairgrounds, the library story for these months is Read a Rhyme, Write a Rhyme. Now, is this about rapping?
Well, it could be. Read a Rhyme, Write a Rhyme is by the children's poet laureate Jack Prelutsky. He's one of my all-time favorite poets. And this story, each page has a different poem start. And so it has different prompts to encourage readers to write their own poems.
Wow.
So you could turn the poem into a rap if you were so inclined.
If someone were to bring along a youngster to Hotchkiss and go to the fairgrounds for this particular story walk, is it a good idea to bring your own, pen and paper or materials, just given COVID concerns?
I would encourage that. There's not really a place on the panels to write your own poem in, so we would sure encourage you to bring a piece of paper, or if you want to memorize your poem, you certainly could.
Or a smartphone, right, these days.
Yeah, or a smartphone. So we would encourage you to read a rhyme and write a rhyme as you're walking along the story walk trail.
I love that that guy is the poet laureate. What'd you call him? The youth, or what was his title?
Children's poet laureate.
Nice. Yeah. I just love how familiar you are with all of this material, and certainly lucky for families in Delta County to have your team serving youngsters, even given the challenges right now with the pandemic. My guest has been Sarah Smith, librarian with Delta County Libraries. Thank you so much for all that you're doing for kids, and good luck. Stay safe.
Oh, you too. And thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You are listening to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. I'm Gavin Dahl. Next up, we'll hear some book recommendations for fans of Hamilton and a recap of how Montrose County librarians Elizabeth Cook and Amy Dickinson spent their unusual summer serving young library patrons. As you know, I spoke with the Delta County librarian Sarah Smith about her work with younger kids, and I wanted to give listeners a chance to learn more about what Montrose libraries are doing for some of the older youth and teens. Start by telling us about your jobs and the services offered at Montrose area library branches pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, it was your fairly typical library. We had patrons in and out all day using the computers, coming to attend programs. In youth services, we had story times a few times a week, and we'd pack those out with a bunch of people having lots of fun, singing songs, making crafts, and obviously that's changed a little bit now. We do a lot of the circulation here in the youth services department with our juvenile materials. We do about 50% of the circulation of the library.
Wow. And so that's a really big part of the patronage of the system. When the stay-at-home order happened, how did the library system respond? When did you guys close?
We closed, I believe it was March 15th. I actually was on vacation right before we closed. So I came back from vacation and was quarantining away from my coworkers in case I picked anything up in Florida. So I came back and we were closed. I was working from home. Everything was different. And up until we were able to kind of bring everybody back, we had two teams, which were alternating weeks, so that we didn't have any problem with if somebody were to get sick. We still had another team that was able to work and keep the library running.
But that must have been a challenge for your department since so much of your work has been focused on providing in-person support, of course, handling all these materials, this huge amount of the flow of traffic of books out to the public. One of the things that hasn't changed from before the pandemic is the book van. Can you talk about how it works and how library patrons in Montrose and Olathe take advantage of the service?
So our book van is fairly new. We were able to unveil it in December of last year at the Christmas parade. We take books from our collection here in the library, and we're able to take them out to people that aren't necessarily able to get into the building. So during the time of the pandemic, obviously that's something that got kicked up a lot. Mm-hmm. So we were going out 2 to 3 days a week on the van. We would have somewhere between, some days it was 20 deliveries, some days it was 40, going out into the city of Montrose and Olathe, delivering bags to the front steps of people's homes.
And throughout the summer, the library has been providing activity bags for kids and adults. Can you talk about these?
Sure. So every week, we would give out activity bags. In the youth services department, that would be a book, a craft, sometimes a little toy or a little thing for them to play with, or crayons or something like that. We were expecting for about 100 people a week to come through the library and pick up these bags. And on the first day, we had 250 go out.
Wow.
So it was definitely a very well-loved program. We had to kind of pivot, even though we had already pivoted to our bags from what our normal programming looks like. We just had to pivot again and make more bags every week. And we actually ended up giving out 2,800 and some, over 2,800 bags over the summer.
Wow. And as far as adaptations since reopening, you've designated hours for older adults and at-risk individuals, and the library's been doing curbside service. I mean, that's a pretty sweet level of service just so people can score free books and movies and music and educate themselves. I mean, keep up the good work on that. Amy, what did you do with your summer programming for teens? Did you have to do a lot? Did you have to learn new software?
Yeah, so I started during the pandemic, so after it had actually begun. So I had a fair bit of experience, rapid experience, the kind that everyone, I think, or many people gained right when everything started shutting down. So I'd had some experience leading programs for students prior to coming here. So one of the things that we tried to focus on with the Teen Summer Reading Program, it was a registration program, and we did not have access to as many books that we could give out, so we didn't give out weekly bags. We gave out bags at the beginning and at the end of the Teen Summer Reading Program with free new books we tried to tailor them to genres or the kinds of books that the teens who registered said that they loved.
Nice.
We included those, but then we also had a lot of virtual events and online contests. So what we did over the summer was we had a virtual book club. We had our first trivia night, first teen trivia night. And then we also were running weekly contests with an idea that it would just be a way to encourage teens to interact with us and build community and have fun during a time when there's a good chance that they're being asked to stay home and they might not be able to see their friends. And also to sort of create maybe some positive energy. So we had online photo contests about what they loved about where they were. We had a meme contest online.
Fun.
We had an emoji story contest, and we had prizes for every one of those. And the turnout varied for each individual contest. And our most popular ones, we probably had 20 to 25 entries. And then a panel of teen judges would choose two winners for each of the contests.
For people who weren't in libraries often in the past couple of years before the pandemic, they're really an evolving set of services. In my own experience, I've seen a lot of young people taking advantage of computer access at the library who simply just don't have the opportunity to use computers or get online, in some cases even with a mobile device outside of that. So it seems like something that's really difficult for the library to be able to keep up that level of service. Is there, for example, the opportunity for people to take advantage of your Wi-Fi like from outside? Or what are some of the ways that you guys have tried to address that challenge of access?
Elizabeth, do you want me to start and you can chime in?
Sure.
So regarding the Wi-Fi, it is kept turned on 24/7, so people can access the Wi-Fi all day and all night here at the library. Though we have rearranged space in the library so that computers will be at least 6 feet apart so we can respect social distancing and keep people safe that way. That means that a few computers are out of commission right now, but we still have access to the computers during the in-person hours that we have for 4 hours every day. So Monday through Wednesday, we have curbside pickup from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., but then the library is open for in-library use from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday and Friday, we have an hour for seniors or for vulnerable populations from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. to come inside the library, and then 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., it's open to the general public. And Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., it's open to the general public.
And have you seen the traffic start to pick back up as people have, you know, as the society has kind of begun to reopen to a degree?
Yes, definitely. So when I am working on Saturdays, I'm working in the circulation department, and part of my job is to sit at the door and tally heads as people come in. So I have definitely noticed a pickup, especially on Saturdays. So as word is getting out about what our kind of different hours are, and word is getting out to people who are maybe more comfortable coming to a public place, we've definitely seen a pickup in people.
My guests are Elizabeth Cook and Amy Dickinson, librarians with Montrose County Libraries. And Elizabeth, you wrote a column for the Montrose Press last month. Great writing, by the way. Congrats on your byline in print. That's always an exciting moment for people.
Thank you.
And you wrote about Hamilton and historical fiction. You wrote that after watching the final notes of Hamilton, the musical, on the streaming service Disney+, we may find ourselves looking for something else to feed a newfound interest in the history of the founding fathers. So I want to ask you, some of this is straight out of your column. What are a few of the first stops people might make in their own search for nonfiction reading material that's available through the library? If they, for example, happen to get lucky enough to get a ticket to Hamilton back in the day, or have now streamed it on Disney.
Of course. So the first place anybody might go if they're interested in Hamilton is the place where it was inspired from. Lin-Manuel Miranda was inspired to write this musical by picking up this book, Alexander Hamilton, by Ron Chernow. It's basically a biography about his life. He read it and thought, hey, let's write a hip-hop musical about this. May not be everybody's reaction. We also have a couple volumes of Alexander Hamilton's biography in his own words. If you've seen the musical, he writes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have two nice lengthy volumes in our nonfiction section of his own words.
And then what about historical fiction? What do you recommend for people interested in that revolutionary period of American history?
So depending on what kind of aspects of the show you're interested in, we had a lot of historical fiction come out of the Hamilton musical. People were interested in learning about his history, and they were writing about his history. A few titles we have here at the library to check out are My Dear Hamilton by Stephanie Dre, I, Eliza Hamilton, which focuses on his wife, by Susan Holloway Scott, and even one about Hamilton and Peggy and their revolutionary friendship by L.M. Eliot.
Didn't Lin-Manuel Miranda write kind of a book based on the musical?
Yes. He wrote, it's just called Hamilton the Revolution. It's got tons of pictures. It's got lyrics from the show. We have it available on Overdrive, which means that you can download an app straight to your phone, check it out from us, and just explore all of the fun visual aspects of it and some of the words of Lin-Manuel Miranda himself.
You beat me to my next question, which was this online service called Overdrive. Now, Overdrive is not something specific only to the Montrose Library, right? It's basically a service that different libraries subscribe to if we're lucky enough to live in a district that provides it.
That's correct.
So what kind of stuff is on Overdrive? I mean, is this just one or two popular things like Lin-Manuel Miranda's work, or is it just stacked with a large portion of your regular collection?
Overdrive is a huge collection. We are actually part of a consortium which all contribute to the Overdrive collection, which means librarians from a bunch of different libraries are all in on curating that and providing audiobooks, ebooks. I believe there's also magazines. Correct me if I'm wrong, Amy.
That's through RB Digital, but you also have access through the library to RB Digital, which will be part of Overdrive soon.
If somebody is listening to this and they're thinking to themselves, man, I have really been missing out. I thought the library was just full of dusty old books, which, of course, it is also. they're not that dusty. How does someone get their... I'm also new in town here, so this is also a personal question. How does someone get their library card? And then once you have your library card, how do you get set up with Overdrive?
The easiest way, if you're in town and you're able to come down to the library when we're open, is to come into our front desk and provide them with a form of ID and your mailing address so that we can get you set up with a library card. If you can't come down in person, you can also call us here at the library and we can get you set up with a library card. And actually, if you're even not comfortable coming down to pick that up, we can mail it to you.
Technically, there's more than one branch in the Montrose Library System.
That is correct. We have another library in Naterita, and we have kind of a smaller branch up in Paradox.
Well, before we go, I want to ask Amy, what's coming up on the calendar for the rest of August and into September for folks? Maybe someone's listening to this and they have a young person in their life who could take advantage of this opportunity.
Sure. So I had mentioned that we had our first trivia event, our first teen trivia event over the summer. So we're going to have our second of what's going to be a monthly series. And I'm very excited about this because it's a special edition of teen trivia called Teens versus Librarians. It's still virtual. It's on Zoom. But all the teens that join will be put in their own separate breakout room for every trivia question. And they'll get to brainstorm the answers against a team of three librarians, one youth services librarian and two adult services librarians here, to see who will come out victorious in that particular contest. Apart from that, next month we have another edition of Teen Trivia, and on September 22nd we'll have our monthly book series again, our book club for teens and almost teens, and this one's recommended for ages 11 and up. We'll be reading Wildfire by Rodman Philbrick. The day after that, we'll kick off a Career Expo series, which is another monthly virtual series we're hosting for teens to introduce them to some different professions. And the professions were actually all chosen by the Teen Advisory Board, which also meets weekly in a virtual environment with me here at the library to basically give guidance on teen programs and collections and displays and all sorts of decisions that might affect them here in the library. And so that one will be on September 23rd, and it'll be with a makeup artist, actually, from New York City who works with bands and models. So that should be kind of fun and exciting to hear about. So So those are just the things that are in the pipeline for the next month or so for teenagers specifically.
People can get more information at montroselibrary.org. Elizabeth Cook and Amy Dickinson, librarians with the Montrose Library System, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
We are linking to Elizabeth Cook's picks for you on our website, kvnf.org. You've been listening to a special library edition of Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Gavin Dahl. Thanks for tuning in.